65,498 square miles. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get to it. This is Spanning the State. Here's your host, Kristen Bride.
Good afternoon and happy Monday. But more importantly, happy 414 day. I would love to hear from you throughout today's show over the text line, Citing Unlimited, WTMJ, talk and text line 855-616-1620. What do you love about Milwaukee? I feel like Milwaukee is an underdog in a lot of ways. I feel like we are a city that has a little bit of a chip on its shoulder. But to me, as someone who has lived all over the country, it is my favorite city I have ever lived in. And I'll get into it a little bit more later in the show. At 2:15, we're going to do a little bit more 414 day, some of the promos, some of the activities. We're going to check in with Elizabeth, who's out and about in Milwaukee. But I would love to read your texts throughout the day of what you love about Milwaukee. So again, let me know. 855-616-1620. Is it our proximity to Lake Michigan? Is it our food? Is it our culture? Because I love it here, and I'll get more into why I love it here later in today's show. But speaking of our show, speaking of Spanning the State, for anyone who is an avid listener, you probably have noticed for the last couple weeks that something has been off. And if you've texted in, I've tried as best I can to let you know that more changes were coming, but I couldn't talk about it yet. But now, as of this morning, we can indeed talk about it. We put out a press release this morning that as of Wednesday, so we have two more shows, but as of Wednesday, the lineup is changing. And so the morning news with Vince and Eric is going to be an hour longer until 10. And then I am joining Steve Scafidi for a political talk show called Point Taken. And so for anyone who's listened to our podcast together, it'll be more of that, except more with the news of the day. So national, Wisconsin, local politics from his side, from my side, perspectives. We'll still have guests, but definitely focused more on politics, and be there every day, 10 to noon together. Very excited about that because Steve is one of my dear friends. He is a big reason I even have a career in radio, because back in the end of summer, early fall of 2020, he randomly DM'd me on what was then Twitter asking if I wanted to come on his show. And that turned into a weekly segment, which turned into a part-time job here. And obviously now I've been here for over a year full time. And like I said, he is truly one of my closest friends. And I think the conversations that we will have on that show will be informative and entertaining. But that also comes at the loss of this show and with the loss of my friend Brian Noonan working at WTMJ, which I think a lot of people have known about and have been asking about. And so now that I can talk about it publicly, I want to publicly thank Brian for working as hard as he did with me to make something of this show, ranging from policy and politics to human interest stories to spinning the wheel to having games to being on site. You know, all the while Brian was driving 90 minutes each way every day to come do this show. And Brian, for anyone who has grown accustomed to listening to him, is a great person. He is an excellent broadcaster. I am a better broadcaster for having gotten to work with him for the last year. And if you want to continue to listen to him, you can always listen to his podcast, The Crafty Brewers. You can follow him on social media, but his website for his podcast is craftybrewerspod.com. Also, I think if you text crafty to 855-616-1620, we'll send you the link directly. But yes, I know it was an awkward time for the last 2 weeks to not be able to address that. And I'm happy I finally can. And I genuinely want to give so much heartfelt thanks to my partnership that I had with him over the last year. So, and Rhea, and the partnership that we had with Rhea. And because she's still here, we're going to see what's next for Rhea as well, because that's a turning tide. Sure. But how you feeling?
I'm good.
Good.
Yeah. Sad to see it go, but I'm really glad to be a part of this. Everything that you said about Brian, I can echo 1,000%. So it's been a really enjoyable process and great for my career, and I've just enjoyed every moment.
Absolutely. All right. Well, with that, let's make the most of the last two shows we have. We have today, we have tomorrow. So when we come back, Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski is here in person. So we're going to talk about libraries because it is, well, last week was Library Week. But we're also going to talk about the state of the Democratic Party. So stay with us on Spanning the State. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bry. I've got two more shows. If you just missed it, tomorrow is the last episode of Spanning the State, because then on Wednesday we are having a new lineup, and I will be on with Steve Scafidi for Point Taken from 10 to noon every day. But we're going to make the most of the shows that we have. So here in studio is the Wisconsin Secretary of State, Sarah Godlewski, who marked 2 years. You've had this job for 2 years, and you're going around the state giving libraries money. And
I mean, I thought, what would be a better way of celebrating 414 Day than to make sure that we're giving Milwaukee Public Schools $8.2 million? We dropped off a check today.
Wow. Is it earmarked for anything specific?
So there are guardrails.
Okay.
They can't just, unfortunately, spend it on anything.
Well, maybe fortunately. That's a different topic, maybe for a different day.
There's some issues maybe that would be helpful.
Well, we'll talk about that later in the episode, too, because CDC can't help us, apparently. But
I didn't know that lead abatement was waste, fraud, and abuse, but I'm glad you're addressing that, Kristen. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, no, we're at Congress Elementary School here in Milwaukee and shared this $8.2 million check, and they can use it for library resources. Great. So think about whether it's books or technology or things that can also help these kids address the digital divide. And when I was talking to these kids today, one of them said, I'm like, so what do you like about your school library? And he's like, you know what? It helps me see the world. Oh. And I'm like, he's like, it makes me think about what I want to be when I grow up. And that's exactly what you know, it's really the school's classroom, these libraries.
Yeah,
resources.
Absolutely. So what other, because you went all over the state, right?
So we were in Green Bay and Appleton and La Crosse and Dane County, and then in the suburbs of Milwaukee on Friday. And then we're in Milwaukee proper for 414 Day today.
Are you going to partake in any of the activities besides going to different schools and libraries?
That's our focus.
You're very close to Deer District, which I know is going to have some fun over there.
I know. I'm going to miss that, unfortunately, okay. But next time.
I didn't realize that you serve as the chair of the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands. Now, first, what is that? And also, when you think of that title, you don't think of that, like, lands with libraries.
Right. So I like to say I'm the chair of the Common School Fund, because that seems to be a little bit more direct. So one of the cool things about our founders, Kristen, so if you allow me to be a little dorky for a minute.
Always. We embrace the nerds on this show.
Good. So our founders for Wisconsin, when being a land grant state, so that means when the federal government gave us all of this land, our state said, you know what, when we sell that land, the proceeds, we're going to put it in a trust fund for our public schools. And so this fund was written in our Constitution in 1848.
Oh, wow.
And unlike a lot of our fellow states out west, a lot of them spent those funds. So they don't exist. But we actually did a smart job in investing. And today that fund is worth $1.5 billion.
Oh, I didn't know any of this history.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And part of my role as the chair is we manage what's this common school fund that's $1.5 billion. And just a few weeks ago, we announced a $70 million distribution to public schools. So, you know, when we're seeing all of these communities go to referenda once, twice, like this is something that they can count on regardless of what might be happening, because we're always showing up and providing this distribution.
So I guess that's my question, as far as we're obviously in a budget year.
Yep.
We just had the joint finance hearing in West Dallas last week. So last week or 2 weeks ago?
It all blends together.
Yeah. Recently.
Yes.
So with $70 million from this fund, how does that interact with money that comes from the actual biennial budget?
So we're not a part of the budget process at all. So we have what's called prudent investor authority. So one of the things that we've focused on is making sure that we have smart investments, that we're also doing it and investing in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I first became chair of this fund, the distribution was $32 million. But we've really focused on reinvesting and doing it in a really smart way, which is why we've seen a 95% growth rate in the last few years.
So then how much is distributed every year? Is it around 70 million every year?
No, it changes. It changes. But our whole goal is that we don't decrease, we increase. So we're hoping that next year it'll be like 72 million and 74. And it's always going up. And again, regardless of what's happening, we can be a constant source of revenue for our schools to rely on.
And is it, who gets it? Like, how do you decide which school districts or which individual schools are receiving grants?
So it's every kid in the state of Wisconsin. So it is every kid in the state of Wisconsin is part of that formula that then is what goes to then these school districts. So it's not because Milwaukee applied and had the best application. Like, every school district, based on how many students they have, is kind of how the formula works.
I had no idea about any of that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I think what's really been neat for me in traveling the state is hearing these stories about how impactful it is. Like, whether it is the databases that these kids have access to so they can help write their reports, to their ability to, you know, they would go to their public library and these books were always checked out and now they have access to them. It's just really been an important tool to help them flourish.
All right. So 2 years in the job.
Yeah.
How has it evolved? What are you liking about it?
Well, I'll tell you, it's evolved a lot since I took that oath of office in my Packer pajamas. So
looking very sharp in your red blazer today instead.
Now I'm not as surprised as we've been there for a while. But look, I think what's been so interesting for me is how we can leverage technology and tools to do things more efficiently, but do them in a way that meets folks where they are. Instead of like what we're seeing from the federal government, where they're like, you know, empowering billionaires and not actually talking to the people about why these cuts are, why these, you know, changes have to happen. Like, we've actually, I mean, we've reinvented our entire process. And now, like, none of our cases are behind. Like, we're processing things in a way that's on time. And while modernization might not be the sexiest thing in government, like, people just want government to work for them. Mm-hmm. They want them to show up and they want them to be there. And that's exactly what we've really focused on. But, you know, my big thing is we can do that by working together and still be effective and still be efficient. We don't have to do it at the expense that, like, we're seeing right now in the federal government.
All right. I have to ask you this because it is, I think it's some of the biggest Wisconsin political news that happened last week.
Yeah.
Ben Wickler stepping down.
I know. It was such sad news, Kristen.
Were you surprised?
I was surprised.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, Ben was really trying to figure out what he wanted to do. Yeah. And I can't imagine our state party without Ben Wickler at the helm of it.
Yeah. I mean, but it's a hard job to keep, especially when you have small children, to keep doing. You also have small children, but your name has been thrown out. At least in the Journal Sentinel's write-up of, there's obviously one person, Devin Remeker, has already announced.
Yep.
Joseph Pecky was on this Steve show on Friday saying he's interested, has not actually formally announced. But your name was in there. Alex Lazary's name was in there. Yeah. Do you have any interest?
I do not have any interest, Kristen. I love what I do.
Okay.
You know, I love serving Wisconsin. And look, I think whatever I can do to continue to be helpful to the important movement that we are seeing, like with the election of Susan Crawford, I mean, every single county swung to the left a little bit. And I think it's because...
Well, after everything swung to the right, though, in November.
Fair. But we worked really hard on that.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
And, I mean, doing these town halls and, like, actually listening to Wisconsinites. And so I would love to continue to be a part of that. But I've got a pretty good day job right now.
All right. Well, you're still a very avid member of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Knowing that... So we did the Susan Crawford. Obviously, we saw every county move to the left.
County.
Public polling, though, for Democrats, not great.
Right.
So as far as your own feelings or conversations you're having, what do you feel like Democrats in Wisconsin and or nationally need to focus on ahead of 2026?
I think we've just got to focus on actually listening and delivering messages that are going to resonate. And like, first and foremost, it's the economy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm at a school with fourth graders. And I asked them, as an elected official, what should we be doing for you? And every single kid almost in that room said, I'm worried about the price of groceries. These are fourth graders, and they're hearing it from their parents.
Yeah.
And so you can't go anywhere without hearing about how the economy is impacting folks. I mean, I did a town hall in Western Wisconsin recently, and a veteran, for example, was sharing with me, he's seen how his housing benefits are going to be cut. And he's like, I served my country, and now I might not get the benefits that I've deserved, so I'm going to be homeless. Like, these are things that are just top of mind for folks, whether you're a veteran or a teacher or a farmer.
So messaging is one thing, but as far as when you look at, obviously, we have Governor Evers, we have the Democrats have a minority in the legislature. As federal funding gets cut and some of these programs start to be a little bit more desolate, what do you think that can be done at the state level?
I think it just further shows how state government is going to be essential, because state's government's going to have to step up and deliver. I mean, we're right now debating our budget, as I'm sure you've talked about on your show, Kristen. Mm-hmm. It's $119 billion. And to me, a budget is a statement of your values. And if we're not willing to fund, for example, public education, or if we're not willing to fund to make sure kids don't, you know, go hungry during school, in addition to like making sure small businesses are set up for success, or our farmers who are facing these horrifying tariffs and can't make their mortgages and are like, the, you know, critical to our economy. I mean, these are things that I think we've really got to like bring up front and have conversations about.
And we will, because another joint finance hearing, I think. They got two more this week?
They do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. All right. Well, we have to let you go. But Sarah Godlewski, Secretary of State, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thanks for having me, Kristen. Excited to be on one of your last shows.
I'm going to say, you should go check out Deer District before you head back to Madison. All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with more after this. Welcome back, but we got to go. We got to go to the ABC News and local headlines. But happy 414 Day. Keep those texts coming. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bry. And over the last two decades, suicide rates in the United States has increased by more than 36%, which is obviously a part of a larger mental health crisis. But last week, Monday?
Yes.
Yes. Top researchers indicated that they have cracked the code to turning that around. Natalie Eilbert is the statewide mental health reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She does incredible reporting on all of this. And we're gonna talk about a variety of different things today. But you're here in studio. Welcome.
Here I am in studio. Thanks for having me, Kristen.
So this was, I mean, the headline alone, as far as like the ability to cut suicide rates mm-hmm. potentially by 25%. Mm-hmm. So what, I also didn't know that, is this correct that suicide is the leading cause of death for every age group?
Yes. I mean, it's not number one or number two, but it's depending on the age group, it's in the top 10 or 11. Especially for young people, there are much fewer reasons to die when you're younger. I'm barring, you know, rare diseases and cancers. Yeah, suicide and accidental injury are the leading causes of death in adolescents and teenagers, for sure.
All right. So what is the zero suicide model?
So this was developed by Henry Ford Health in Detroit. The idea is somewhat simple on its surface. Most people, about 82% of people in the year ahead of their death, see a primary care physician. A year ahead of their death by suicide, okay. I should make sure is clear. And so the idea is that rather than...
That is really high.
It is very high. Rather than simply, you know, for those who say at the surface that they have any kind of anxiety or depression, you fill up a form ahead of time at the doctor's, this goes ahead one step further and just screens everybody who comes in to a physician's office. And they use what's called the PHQ-9, which monitors for typically anxiety and depression. But question number 9 is a very important one. That's the one that asks how often in the last 2 weeks have you considered to, basically, is the world better off without you, is the question. And if it's like several times a week or several times a week you think this versus not at all, that's going to indicate how much care you need. So the idea conceptually is that once you fill this form out and you're screened, they can then respond with early interventions.
So it's as simple as just having everyone take a survey?
Yes.
Wow.
Obviously, there are flaws to this. Maybe some people are going to not be fully, honest about it. But they're not going to flat out lie. They might say once a week or once a month or, you know, whatever it is, they're going to maybe give a less than straight answer. But a lot of folks, if you ask them directly, do you have a plan to kill yourself? Statistics show that people are pretty honest about that if you're direct with them. So this is a way to help people respond or get the care they need early. And then after that appointment to keep up, you know, monitoring for symptoms, getting them psychotherapy they need, and, you know, whatever talk therapy, group help they need, it helps. And how this really came to be was they tried this model. They developed it in 2001. They attempted it at their at the Henry Ford Health Clinic in Detroit. And over the course of 1 year at this clinic, there were zero suicides. So it really was.
And how much of a decrease was that?
That's a great question. I don't have the answer off the top of my head, but I do know that they tried it again at these at three Kaiser Permanente health clinics, which are huge health clinics, and they also saw a significant decrease in suicide rates. So the model has been sort of in development since 2001. The report came out just on last Monday, and they're pretty certain that if they continue aggressively responding to people who are at risk of suicidality, then it can really make a dent in both cases of suicide and suicide attempts.
So it feels like I said, it's like, oh, it's a survey. Mm-hmm. So as far as what would it take to expand into more primary care doctors' offices to have this be part of, I literally was at the doctor this morning with my kid for her pediatrician, and I had to fill out all the milestones at 18 months mm-hmm. of what she's doing or not doing. So it's like a very normal thing as far as what you fill out when you go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. What would it take to expand so that more states, more doctors' offices are using this?
Yeah, that's a great question, especially at a time when staffing shortages are happening everywhere, right? Especially with behavioral health. The idea here is for these big health institutions like Kaiser Permanente and Henry Ford Health to coordinate with other insurance companies and sort of like kind of bring these insurance companies up to speed. So, for example, the Henry Ford Health Clinic started working with Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is the largest insurance company in Michigan. And together they came up with this partnership that this insurance company can work with every clinic across the state to help train physicians on how to administer the survey. And it's a very simple, again, it's a simple survey, right? And it just tracks things. And I think the idea is they want to replicate that model where they're coordinating with mental health clinics, with insurance companies, with like big mental health stakeholders, big stakeholders in health in general, just to see how far they can take this, because it really does begin with this PHQ-9 survey, and then they can take a suicide risk assessment test if they test a certain way on that first screening. So it really is just like tapering down each step of the way to understand what and to what extent and how risky is it for this person to not have treatment.
Yeah. So if it were to start in Wisconsin, would it have to be initiated through, like, I don't know, isn't United the biggest one here?
Yes, I believe so. I guess that'd be a question for the health care workers in Wisconsin. I think they're working these particular clinics. The first step was getting this research published in one of the largest medical journals in the country, right? So now that it's out there, the hope is that
People's interests are peaked.
Yeah, people's interests are peaked.
As far as like, how do we incorporate this? All right.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I'll ask you when we come back is if it would require federal funding.
Oh.
Because I feel like a lot of your headlines and stories recently have discussed the impact of federal funding and federal workers being fired and the impact on mental health initiatives here in Wisconsin. So we'll talk more about that. On the other side of this, we're talking to Natalie Eilbert, who is the statewide mental health reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Stay with us on Spanning the State. Well, welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bry, and we're talking to Natalie Eilbert, who is the state mental health reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we were just talking about some good news as far as some research and studies that have been done as far as curbing suicide rates through a survey that you would take at your doctor's office. Less good news, as we see each week as far as different federal funding that's been cut or workers that have been fired. I wanted to get your kind of rundown on different things within Wisconsin that have been affected so far. Because what was it, 2023 or 22 that was the year of mental health?
2022.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's been a fair amount of progress of different like hotlines and and trying to put more resources in. Mm-hmm. But how problematic is it? Like how bleak is it really if some of these both federal workers and federal funding get cut?
Okay, so let's go a little bit far. Let's go a little bit back to COVID times. Uh-huh. So the one upshot, if there was any of COVID, the one thing that really brought a lot of information to the fore was the fact that people were not doing well. More and more people became honest about their mental health during COVID. It was always there, this mental health crisis. As we mentioned in the first segment, suicide rates have been going up for a number of years, way before the pandemic. Depression, anxiety, and suicide rates also went up during the pandemic. During that time, there was, it reached an inflection point to the point where, you know, using COVID funds, ARPA dollars, American Rescue Plan Act dollars, a lot of the funds went not just to COVID public health initiatives, but to behavioral health, which also includes opioid, opioid mm-hmm. epidemic money, for opioid cessation. So it was on the right track. This funding was dispersed every year, and up until this year, we the state of Wisconsin was getting a fair amount of money from federal to put toward mental health housing initiatives like respite homes, peer run places for people to go if they were in emotional distress or struggling with their addictions. Obviously, we had the opioid settlement dollars, which were separate dollars, but the combination of opioid settlement dollars and ARPA dollars really helped to buoy a lot of the kinds of work that could happen for agencies that worked with that demographic. A lot of times, those are low-income people who are on Medicaid, and the thing about Medicaid is it doesn't cover overnights, and so COVID dollars were really helpful for people that were in recovery who needed help, like inpatient help. It was also really putting money into school-based mental health programs. So last month, Robert Kennedy Jr. and HHS, Health and Human Services, abruptly, without warning, canceled $11 billion in forthcoming money because it was connected to COVID, with the caveat that COVID is over. But that is an oversimplification of what that money is for. Wisconsin was poised to use another $225 million of its ARPA dollars for the year. A lot of that would have gone toward behavioral health programs. At the same time, it also would have gone toward, and this story just came out this morning, toward domestic abuse and in general victim services providers. So a lot of that funding was really important to really vulnerable people, whether they were fleeing domestic violence, whether they were struggling with addiction, whether they were struggling to, they had 6 months to 1 year waits to see a therapist when their symptoms were critical. Mm-hmm. So all of those things were stripped away last March. I'm sorry, last month.
Yeah, last month.
And so it's just been a tumultuous time for states across the country to figure out what to do, because a federal, a district court judge blocked the ARPA dollars from being canceled because these were contracted funds. This is a grant that had a promise of
it's already been appropriated.
Yeah, it's already been appropriated, but it basically, cut things off before they could be finalized. So a lot of programs had to go under. The one major one is Uplift Wisconsin. It was a helpline, a state-run helpline that was run by, people who have lived experiences with mental health.
Is that different than 988?
Yes.
Okay.
So Uplift Wisconsin connected people with more peer-run, peer-trained help. They're not therapists, but they're people who have lived experiences, and they were able to talk to other individuals in Wisconsin, and it was a lot easier to talk to someone in that state because a lot of people don't think they're in a full-blown crisis, right? They just need a little help. And so the warm line was there to help them and to connect them to resources. And now Uplift Wisconsin, as of April, I don't even know what day it is anymore. I think it was April.
Tomorrow is tax day, if that helps you.
That does help me. I think it was last Thursday that Uplift Wisconsin basically had to furlough their entire staff. And that's the end of that. But there are other programs, too, that are really struggling to make it to September when, that's when the new biennium gets signed and put into law. So...
All right. Well, if you would like to follow her work, please do. She's an excellent reporter. Natalie Eilbert is the statewide mental health reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we will stay up to date with all things mental health and funding. But thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right. We'll be back with more after this.